Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Hello.
Always your ceremonial crash as you answer. I'm always worried that your death will come by way of Skype.
That wouldn't surprise me. Have you seen the line of work I'm in?
It's so hard for me to sit back here in this studio looking at a guy out here hollering my name when last year I spent more money on spilt liquor in bars from one side of this world to the other than you made. You're talking to the Rolex wearing, diamond ring wearing, kiss stealing, woo, wheeling dealing, limousine riding, jet flying son of a gun, and I'm having a hard time holding these alligators down. Woo!
Welcome to Bauer and Pollock. I am John Pollock from Live Audio Wrestling, joined by MLW's Court Bauer for the season finale of Bauer and Pollock. How are you, Court?
I'm just packing up some boxes here, taping them real nice, getting ready to close down the studio once and for all as we turn off the lights on Bauer and Pollock after this episode.
Yes, we're dividing all our stuff amicably. And moving on from this this cohabitation.
We are officially decoupling.
Yes, it's done. We are the Cedric Alexander and Alicia Fox of the wrestling podcast environment. Oh, boy.
Who's on the hotline, Mean Gene?
Oh, Christ. One second.
This is what we call a hell. The season finale for a podcast. I guess a grand finale for a podcast.
So yes, Court, we have had this recent hiatus, and we have just made the decision that is very difficult, just scheduling-wise, trying to do this show weekly. So I will bear the brunt of this because my schedule's just kind of gotten nuts at this point with different shows, Fight Network stuff, and thus we felt we should do one more show here. And we can always assess things in the future, but I think it's probably the best call at this point to just state that this show will not be moving forward. But we're going to do one final show here.
Well, good. I thought you were going to hang up on me.
Well, no, I wouldn't be doing that. That'll come in time after this this last show here. But we have a lot to discuss.
We do?
Oh, yeah. We're going to go through 3 months' worth of news.
All right. So let's start with the week of November 17th. Everyone go back in time.
Yes. What do you think is going to happen with Lesnar and Goldberg this weekend at the Survivor Series in Toronto? I think they're going Broadway.
I'm thinking, you know, there's going to be some sort of convoluted finish, running or something like that, some sort of cheap finish. They'll probably do the classic distraction, then schoolboy.
Yeah, that'll be it. Yeah. I think it'll probably go pretty long, though, and the crowd might tune out at some point. I wonder if the crowd will turn on that match or not.
Well, the one thing we know for sure is this is Goldberg's last match, so...
Well, yeah, he stated in the promo, you're last, so
yeah.
You'd never lie in a wrestling promo if you're a babyface.
No. But we should talk a little bit about Brock Lesnar and what's going on with Dana White, Brock Lesnar, and the UFC, and it's not what a lot of people would think. In fact, it's Mark Hunt filing a RICO lawsuit against the three, and it's pretty surprising to see this thing take such a shocking turn here.
Yeah, this has turned into a Sons of Anarchy storyline, it feels like, with a RICO suit coming to the forefront here. Not every day you get a RICO suit in mixed martial arts, but that is what Mark Hunt has filed against Dana White, Brock Lesnar, and Zuffa LLC, the, I guess now, former parent company of the UFC. And he is seeking a big settlement over a number of charges he is alleging here coming out of the UFC 200 and the two failed tests of Brock Lesnar for clomiphene and believing that there was wrongdoing here. He is stating essentially fraud was committed, racketeering amongst different charges. This is a pretty ambitious case. But on the surface here, Court, you have Mark Hunt, who took this fight with Brock Lesnar, and they waived the four-month period of Brock Lesnar, where typically for a fighter to retire, they come back and they have to go through a four-month testing pool, and they opted not to do that with Brock because he had retired before the USADA protocol, and then he fails a test, which actually the first one was conducted before the fight, and it was the results that didn't come back until after. So it's an interesting case. I don't know what Mark Hunt's success will be in this case, but it's one where he was certainly, I think you could make an argument, he was certainly an aggrieved party in all of this, having to have this fight with a guy that had tested positive for a banned substance, and then the results came in after the fight.
Yeah, and it's an interesting time because the UFC is a different UFC than it was when this fight went down. Different management, and this management's trying to keep this company lean and mean and keep profits high. In a RICO lawsuit, while they have their own in-house counsel, they're going to have to go outside to fight this. And if they lose, it could cost them a significant amount. I'm curious to see if that happens. I don't know the validity of the lawsuit. I really don't. But we'll see in the next few months how this thing – it'll take some time, not just months, probably over a year to get this resolved. But Mark Hunt had threatened taking severe action against the UFC and company, and he backed it up here. So unfortunate, because I really liked that fight. But you know, you have to hold people accountable, and there was some weirdness going on with how they fast-tracked Brock for this fight. And of course – you're always going to make exceptions to the rule when you're a promoter, when you have a scenario like this, a big fight and a big show to put a big fight on and a big player. You're going to look the other way. It's too tempting. It's even if you're disciplined, most promoters are going to be they're going to be intoxicated by the opportunity to do a big fight. And that's what happened here. And Mark Hunt lost that fight. And now he's really going for the jugular.
Yeah, and I actually spoke to a litigation lawyer on Wednesday and brought up a great point, the fact that Mark Hunt, he's trying to prove some kind of conspiracy here. But, I mean, it was no secret that Brock Lesnar was having this four-month testing period waived in favor of him just coming back and fighting right away. So it's going to be hard to prove that there was any collusion going on here involving the UFC. And, yeah, we will see if this case can actually makes it to court, if it's just some settlement or if it's just outright dismissed. So that will be something to watch. On the Brock Lesnar front, though, Court, his contract will be coming up with the WWE just over a year from now. He's going to be 40 years of age at that point. And it's interesting in all of this that Lesnar has not removed himself. He hasn't retired, so therefore he's still subject to testing by USADA. And I would think that Brock Lesnar, that door to fight yet again, I don't think that door has closed for Brock Lesnar in his mind.
And for the UFC that wants to drive up profits again, he's a very appealing solution for some of their pay-per-views in 2017, 2018, because they need to do big numbers. Where's Ronda Rousey going to be? Where's Conor McGregor going to be? A lot of guys, they don't know where they're going to be. GSP, I thought, would be fighting in 2017. It does not look like that's going to happen either. So the UFC is very much in a transitional period. And sometimes money doesn't even solve all your problems, because they lost a key person in their matchmaker, Joe Silva. And Joe Silva was a fantastic guy at making these deals come together, massaging them, and putting together great fight cards. And I don't want to take anything away from Sean Shelby. He's fantastic too. But Old Reliable was Joe Silva.
Yeah, and they're dealing with a lot of they're dealing with a lot of kind of immovable objects at the moment when it comes to their big stars. And you cite McGregor and Rousey, who we're not expecting to be fighting in the next couple of months. For Rousey, maybe never again. And on top of that, George St. Pierre is on the sidelines. Brock Lesnar is not at your disposal. And this is coming off a year where they had five shows that topped a million buys. You're looking at debt you have to pay off for the sale. And I don't know where those big main events are. The Diaz brothers are pretty comfortable just sitting on the outside at this point. And they want a lot of money to fight again, and it's not an easy answer as to where these big money fights are going to come from in 2017, where there are a lot of necessities for this company to put on as many big money fights as possible and try and do the business of 2016.
The art of making a star has never been such a necessary tool for promoters in pro wrestling and in MMA like it is going into 2017 here. And you look at all the band-aids, even in the WWE, look at that Royal Rumble poster as an example, and how front and center are so many part-time, not even part-time, one-off, you know, once a year kind of guys like Undertaker. You see Bill Goldberg on that poster. And buried way in the back of that Royal Rumble poster is AJ Styles, the WWE champion with the most prestigious belt in all of WWE. And look at where Roman Reigns is even positioned. Your guys that are front and center are not your guys making towns. And it's a priority. It should be a priority for a lot of these promotions to rev up the star-making machine and put those guys in your 1A and 1B slot and make them be on the same level as some of these other guys, because they're all band-aids and you have to find stars, whether it's a UFC, scrambling, or WWE. It's go time.
What have you thought thus far of the build for the Royal Rumble? We're just over 2 weeks away from the Rumble, where they will have NXT TakeOver on the Saturday and then the Rumble at the Alamo Dome. We have a number of entrants that they have announced for the Rumble, along with the title matches: Charlotte and Bayley, Rich Swann and Neville. And this is 1 year, Court, where you can look at the entrance at the Rumble and you can make arguments for a number of guys depending on what direction they have set for WrestleMania.
Yeah, and they've really tried to give you the visuals of what it would look like if Bill Goldberg wins and other guys. And I think that's cool. They've done a very good job of promoting this going back to November with Brock and Goldberg being announced really early. And I would say this is probably the longest build for a Royal Rumble they've done ever. You know, when you think about November, when they really started that, I think December is when they started the build for the Royal Rumble 92. And that to me was probably the second longest build. And that was a very memorable Royal Rumble. I guess they started that in December of 91. So, dude, I'm very interested to see how this show does, both at the box office and in terms of how they put together creatively. They have a lot of tickets to still sell at the Alamo Dome, and if they fill it, it's going to look fantastic, and it's going to set the tone for the next few months. We have a lot of shows, a lot of TV to fill, and they're going to rev up the machine for WrestleMania, which looks to have guys like The Undertaker on it, Brock Lesnar, Bill Goldberg, John Cena. I don't think Shawn Michaels is coming back. What do you think?
No, I think that was made pretty crystal clear on Monday of Shawn Michaels, and not just not returning at the Rumble. I don't know if this guy – I don't think this guy really has any desire to come back. And I feel that had he had it in his mind to come back, it would have been now. And the only reason I say that is that we know about his work at the Performance Center, and that was the part of me that thought maybe being around all of these guys and getting kind of that spark back would maybe initiate him to start thinking of the idea of doing just one more match. His kids are a lot older now. He may have that incentive, but it doesn't appear that he has that desire to come back. And I would say if it's not happening now, I think he's really happy with how the book closed on his career, and why come back at this point?
Yeah. A bad back, bad shoulder, bad knees. That can be a lot of reminders every morning when you wake up and you feel those pains from all of the great matches that you put on for fans. And I don't know how much higher you can get than how he went out. And he also has the constant reminder of how the Ric Flair, Shawn Michaels match ended, and then the aftermath where Rick went and returned and did the Hulk Hogan tour, went to TNA, and I think Rick has been on record saying he regretted doing it in the end, but at the moment it was too tempting. And Shawn remembers that probably too. It's like, you don't want to take away from what you did and that final chapter, because it's going to be hard to add another chapter to an amazing career. So I was looking forward to seeing AJ Styles versus Shawn Michaels at the Rumble. That is obviously not happening. I think they have a very stacked undercard, and I don't even want to call it an undercard, but you have Cena versus AJ for the title. You also have the WWE Universal title in play, and now you have a great cruiserweight match. I really like this match a lot with Rich Swann versus Neville. I almost wonder if it's too early for Neville to be chasing Tally. He just turned heel, and I think they could have done a little bit more of a build, but they're going for it, and it's going to be a great match.
Yeah, it almost felt a few weeks ago that they realized that, because they were going to do this match on 205 Live a few weeks ago and then delayed it, and obviously now they're doing the title match at the Rumble. Neville, to me, has been the breakout performer of this division. I think he's been excellent in this heel role at this point. And yeah, it may be early, and you've already flipped that title a number of times since Perkins won it. But Neville definitely feels like the guy that you can start to build this division around one guy, because it's been a lot of throwing ideas against the wall. And to be honest, not a whole lot of it has stuck. But Neville has been one thing that has worked out of this main roster version of the Cruiserweight division.
And it's funny, because I actually think the cape would have worked with him as a heel as opposed to a babyface. And he just dropped the cape. I don't think he has it anymore. I think he'll be a great base, even though he can go and fly in the air for Rich Swann and some of the other guys. And he can be nasty. You can see he has that potential to really get his heel on in a match. And that's what you need this division to be. It can't be kind of hokey. And he's a physically intimidating guy in that division, which is a different dynamic than they've had in the past. I mean, you had that a little bit with Nice, but I think there's a little bit more teeth to Neville as a heel than Nice. So that's going to be a fun match. I think it's going to be exciting. And I want to see more character development from Rich Swann, and I think everyone's saying that, so I'm not going to waste everyone's time breaking that one down, but I think that's a good one. And there's a lot of interesting things for WWE in 2017. If you look at the big picture on this final show, I think Cassius Ohno coming back to NXT is a great move, and hopefully it shakes things up in a positive way for NXT, which has felt very stale lately. I don't know if you would agree.
Yeah, I mean, the last number of weeks haven't been new episodes, and now you've got the new show airing this week to build up TakeOver. But you're right. I think everyone is kind of – they've moved past the Nakamura-Samoa Joe feud, and I think they're looking at what is next for especially Samoa Joe and even Nakamura at this point. And once you remove those two, which not to say both are going to be leaving – where is that next level of guys? And you have Bobby Roode in the mix. And I mean, Tommy End hasn't even made it to television yet. There's a lot of moving parts at NXT right now. And you wonder who are going to be the key guys for not so much this takeover, but the WrestleMania weekend one and getting the next crop of guys going. Because it feels like they're kind of at the tail end of their last cycle of guys. And that's how NXT should be, is that once guys have had that big run, that big focus, it's graduation day. They should be moving up, and you should have that next level ready. And there doesn't seem to be a great batch of those guys that are instantly ready to take over the reins of the prior class.
And a lot of these guys are outsourced. They're brought in from other places. They're not guys that are being developed from scratch. I think Killian Dane, Big Damo's former name.
Wasn't that your old nickname?
I don't want to get into my past. But yes, Killian Dane, I think, should be a big player for NXT in the next year or so. Tommy End, now Aleister Black, I think, is another big get. So if you look at those two along with Ohno, that's a pretty exciting trio. And if you add a Kyle O'Reilly to that mix, unless he goes to the 205 Live cruiserweight thing, he could be another interesting guy to put in in that equation.
Do you see that as the destination for O'Reilly is WWE? I mean, the fact that they did the title change, I think, tells you where Ring of Honor expects his future to be. But from my understanding, he hasn't signed anything yet. That was as of a week ago. I don't know. Not knowing what the offer would be, it just seemed that Kyle O'Reilly, it's going to be a tough system for him to navigate, as opposed to the new, especially New Japan with Ring of Honor as well, supplementing that.
It's a layup. Lock it in. Kyle O'Reilly is heading to WWE.
And would you have him in the cruiserweight division?
I would prefer he marinate a little bit in NXT. I want to see his character, his persona develop and evolve a little bit more. And then you can place him where you wish. But I think he can – he's a guy that you don't have to fast track like a Shinsuke Nakamura, who I think they need on the main roster now more than ever. And I think it's time to move him up and put a Kyle O'Reilly in NXT.
You know who's been lost in the mix too? And this is a – I feel this is a byproduct of so many guys coming in. And Kenny Omega cited this, that they're signing so many people here. And Roderick Strong is one of those guys who came in, and you had the Austin Aries injury, which kind of curtailed that. But he's someone that just came in, and you really haven't seen a whole lot from him at this point. And that's one of those guys that could be one of those real building blocks for – NXT at this point, if not more.
Yeah, yeah. And Kenny Omega is a guy that ultimately I see sticking with New Japan for so many reasons, but money talks. And how much money would WWE be willing to put in a contract for year one for Kenny Omega? And if you're Kenny Omega, do you end up – yes, you could be maybe the next Shawn Michaels. You could be the next whatever. Or you could be the next Dolph Ziggler, an incredible wrestler that's slotted in a place that ultimately is not very fulfilling. He'll still make more money, but for Kenny Omega, since I first met him in Atlanta when he was part of the beleaguered Deep South Wrestling developmental territory, an incredible gem of an idea orchestrated by John Laurinaitis, you could see he was not satisfied with his career path and asked for his release, which took a lot of balls. He was very diplomatic about it, but he did it. And he moved on and started from the ground level in Japan at the lowest levels and very, very dedicated to that path, built himself an incredible resume. And here in January 2017, we see how he's paid that off. It's been a great return on his investment. Does that now take him back to WWE? That'd be ironic, but you never say never in wrestling.
Yeah, he's what a fascinating case of what happens with Omega, and everyone is, you know, discussing what his status is. And I mean, it goes to a larger point that it comes down to how aggressive the WWE is going to get with anybody once their contracts come due. And this goes beyond Kenny Omega. They have the resources that if they want somebody, they'll get them. And that's the whole discussion is internally of how much we are going to put out to a Kenny Omega, and how much that upsets our locker room if a Kenny Omega comes in at this gigantic amount that it would take to him, for him to leave a pretty nice quality of life and happiness outside of the WWE to come and take on that schedule. Those are the things that we don't always focus upon, is just that locker room dynamic too, of someone coming in with a giant amount because the WWE decides to get super aggressive this year, as opposed to with other guys that just getting into the WWE was enough for them regardless of what the offer is.
And what I like about Kenny Omega is he can really revitalize not just Canada for them, which is a market that with Jericho, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, and others like Natalya, they could do so much business there, but they're really neglecting it and showcasing their guys as Canadian stars. But you could get that with Kenny Omega as well as those very talented guys. But you could also play to Japan too. You know, he speaks Japanese. He's really – you get a 2-for-1 with him, and he's entering his prime years. He's not exiting his prime years. And yeah, his bump card's probably a little bit fuller because he did that New Japan schedule. But you're still entering his prime years, his prime earning years from his point of view too. Does he want to do it in Japan? Or does he want to do it in the United States and abroad for WWE? He's in the driver's seat in a lot of ways, and he probably has to take a little bit of a risk and leap of faith if he goes to WWE. On the flip side, New Japan's trying to do ambitious things in the United States later this year, and I think he factors in big with that. And how does that come together, though? We don't know. We'll see.
Who do you feel, for this next year ahead, is the most valuable asset for New Japan Pro Wrestling, one particular individual that you would feel would be critical if they were to lose them? Or is there that one guy that would just be so crippling if they lost, with these expansion plans in mind as well?
It's Jado and Gato. because you look at what they accomplished in the last year, which was a transitional year for them. That was amazing because there's a lot of quick fixes that a lot of bookers get enticed to do, and you can see a lot of promoters trip up and bookers throwing some money to someone to come in, thinking it's going to work and it's going to be a Band-Aid. Instead, these guys really doubled down. They had long-term projects, and they didn't look for the instant gratification of paying them off. They took their time, like they did when they had to revitalize New Japan several years ago. They did it again in a lot of ways in 2016. And Kenny Omega was the replacement for AJ Styles. After putting Shibata through a bunch of tests, they seem to have earmarked him for greater things. Okada's always been their go-to guy for the last few years. And so they've done a really good job of working on that. Also, I think of pumping up their junior heavyweight division.
Yeah.
They are, to me, the 1-2 punch. If you removed it from the equation, it's almost like a house of cards for New Japan. They have, to me, the most value in the company because they can nurture prospects into top stars. And that's a really – if you look at the wrestling landscape across the board in every country, every region, that's the most cherished, most coveted thing you can have as an owner of a company, more than a star. It's the people that can create many stars and are disciplined and can pull it off. And I look at them more than I look at Okada or anyone as the real key to New Japan's success. Now, you talk about United States. I think, again, that plays into the United States. Kenny Omega does help. Is he that huge of a game changer for the U.S.? It's hard to know. You know, Bullet Club was a huge thing. It was a huge marketing thing with the shirts. But that's not Kenny Omega. He's a different thing. He's a different type of cat. But I still think he has incredible value to the New Japan U.S. expansion. And especially if they want any English language country, whether it's Great Britain, whether it's Canada, he has great value to them.
You know who I feel is a loss on almost more so the New Japan end than Ring of Honor is Steve Corino, because I think he has been great in his role doing commentary with Kevin Kelly, and who they choose to fill that void of Steve Corino. I think that's a really important an important slot to fill. They're going to be going back for English commentary with the new beginning cards that have been announced for February, and you watch that broadcast from Wrestle Kingdom, and Steve Corino was there to break down the key stories in the matches, and that's somebody that not just for Ring of Honor is a loss, but I think as well for New Japan and these plans they have this year to have the right people there to convey those stories.
Steve Corino really excels behind the scenes in helping young guys out and teaching them psychology. He really does a great job at that, and that's something that a lot of veterans – there's just not a lot of veterans. We're going through such a young wave of talent that have just popped up everywhere, but they don't necessarily have the veteran giving them that feedback on a regular basis. And Steve has been that constant in the United States on indies and on Ring of Honor's shows. He's a really valuable player, and he's a very he's not a guy that fucks with you. He's just a real normal dude, all things considered, for a veteran. And so losing him is a big loss for Ring of Honor, for the boys touring in New Japan that get to have a beer with him. And it's a big get for his next move, whether it's Orlando or whatever. I think he's a great get. I've known Steve for a million years, and he's always loved the business, always been a fan of that classic psychology, and a lot of people have benefited from learning under the king of old school's learning tree.
Do you feel that Gato would be able to come into TNA and change things around?
It's, you know, it's an American product. It's so hard to know because you're playing a bit on TV to a different audience. And based on his fundamentals, he'd do a fantastic job writing TV and a product that's compelling on TV. I think he'd have a better shot than most of the guys they put through there. TNA just brought back in some capacity Jeff Jarrett and Dutch Mantel under their new ownership. And Dutch is an incredibly talented wrestling mind. And Jeff is a guy that's, you know, he's a third generation legacy guy. He really gets it. But, you know, I look at – I made this analogy on the MLW radio show. It's like bringing back someone that was part of laying down the foundation, the culture, key players that he advocated, like Vince Russo, for another round. This is now what, his third or fourth go at it. It's like, how many times do we need to do this? And I like what, like, for example, New Japan did when they came to the, when they're rolling out their U.S. strategies. They found something new, someone fresh, had a good reputation that was recommended, and they gave him a whirl in George Carroll Jr. And I think it's going to work out great for them. There's nothing wrong with, you know, Jeff or Dutch, but been there, done that with TNA. And it's like, if you have a team that's maybe slumming it at the bottom of the rankings, and they bring back a coach that really was maybe a 500 coach in terms of what his win-loss record was for the team, you kind of know what you're going to get, and it doesn't light your world on fire. My question to you is, do you think Vince Russo is close behind?
I mean, conventional wisdom would say no, but I mean –
No?
Who knows at this point?
Conventional wisdom and
My conventional wisdom in my mind. You know, you also look at TNA and just how drastically things have changed in North America in just the last 3 years. Where you go back to TNA in the Spike era. Like, go back to 2010, where they had so much of the market that they could have cornered as their own, and being on top, like with the budget they had at that time, where they could have outbid Ring of Honor for a lot of talent and cornered that area. And they had working agreements in Mexico with New Japan and all of the advantages they had of being on Spike. And you fast forward to today, even their inroads in the UK and that market as it was heating up with talent. And instead, now in 2016, so much of this talent, they are under contract elsewhere. It's such a different world where the WWE is now signing guys that you never would have imagined 6 years ago would be in that WWE system, much less thriving at it. And you're getting so much great wrestling for free every week that just being pro wrestling that Impact is trying to present, it's not enough for people. You have to be so different and bringing something to the table that no one else is. And thus far, I mean, you can make the argument they're doing that with the Hardys, but that to me is not something you can build an entire company around. That I don't think there are any easy answers to what TNA does to start their climb to just get back into the game, much less climb up this giant mountain that they have fallen from over the last number of years. And I think the Pop deal is related to that. I don't know how much you can really build an audience on Pop TV. That's a big problem.
It is a problem. It's a long-term thing. You're not going to see quick changes. And it's something that they have to be patient with. You have to bring in the right guys. And that's so pivotal for this thing to work. If you want to refresh a wrestling company or a sports team or a TV network, why would you go backwards? You're going in a circle, not forward, in my opinion. To change a failed culture and a failed business, you don't revisit the original DNA. You sandblast that bitch away and introduce new, like I said about New Japan, what they're trying to do, what they did several years ago. And those that don't learn from history are bound to repeat it with similar results. So until otherwise, I'm just, you know, I'm not trying to knock anyone, but I'm very skeptical, and I want to see this thing thrive and live and reach the heights it never did. I don't know if they're charting a course to go down that road. We'll see how it plays out.
It's almost like you just want to see, you know, what areas can you really provide something that's truly unique and different? And maybe it's something that just, you know, come up with some great, like, treat your television tapings almost as like an insulated season. You have 9 weeks of TV where you are going to introduce all these different stories that have a beginning, middle, an end. Load up on some guys that are great talkers, mm-hmm. because that's something that you can look at in terms of those promos. Now, it's a lot easier said than done. Just find great talkers. Allow for more of that. Allow for things to have really like a story-like feel to it. It feels like when I watch Impact, it's a lot of just – it's matches that are eating up time, and we are watching week number 6 in our 8 to 9 week taping session. And just putting on wrestling, I just don't know if that cuts it at this point for when you have so many options out there. What is the reason to set aside 2 hours every week for Impact? That's another one. It's a long show. If they didn't have all these international commitments, I would say just cut this thing down to an hour. And for their taping schedule, that would bear some dividends for the talent as well. But, you know, you're handcuffed to a certain degree here. And I don't know what the easy answers are.
I don't know what the easy answers are. There's not an easy answer, really.
Yeah, there's not. There aren't easy answers in any of
this. This is an institutional thing where they have to examine every corner of the operation and really evaluate in a very blunt and hard way what's broken and how do you fix it and diagnose the problems and then find a cure for them. And that might really take gutting a lot of this operation. And it's
maybe you keep like your key guys that you feel are necessary, but each set of tapings, if you're going to be doing these every couple of month tapings, bringing in fresh guys that can fill this up rather than the same roster from taping to taping. Open up your borders. Give a chance to work with some other companies that might have an interest in working with you, or guys that have some buzz that can just come in for a set of tapings. And I don't know. I just think that, you know, the current model has not worked. So why are we just going to continue doing status quo when status quo is what got us here?
They are tasked with a very challenging road ahead, and I wish them the best. They have to go at it with an incredible first day on the job. You know, they can't look at this and think, let's just continue on it. This is the first day on the job. You have to approach everything and learn it from the jump all over again, and learn from your mistakes from the past, or you're going to repeat them. And There's so much that needs to be looked at, and how do they fit in, and how do they service an audience in the here and now, and then in 2 years from now, and then in 5 years from now. You need a short-term plan and a long-term plan, and then you have to start thinking how you're going to really appeal to licensing partners, because that's going to be such a key to keeping this thing going. You have an influx of cash, but that's not going to last forever. People are going to get tired of cutting checks. You're going to have to be solvent, and that's something that they've struggled with since day one until today. So these are things that are these are struggles. These are real struggles, but TNA, by hook or by crook, has always kicked out at 2.999, and I have no reason to believe they won't kick out a few more times.
We also have the WWE's UK tournament coming up this weekend. It's going to be Saturday and Sunday at 3 Eastern on the network from Blackpool, England. They're both scheduled to be 2-hour shows. Are you optimistic about this tournament, Court, and the viability of a weekly show for based out of the UK for the company?
Well, it's an interesting idea. The UK talent's a little bit of a mixed bag. There's some great, there's some question marks in there. We'll see how it plays out. I'm curious to see in the aftermath of what happens to this newly crowned British champion. Does he show up on Monday Night Raw? Does he show up on SmackDown? Does he show up on both shows? How do they present this new champion? They have to make it a big deal. They really do. And even if they don't do anything moving forward, I think if you're going to have a new championship awarded to someone, it shouldn't feel big. Of course, WWE has awarded a lot of titles in the last 6 months when they did the brand split, and they have now two women's top titles. You have this universal belt that has struggled for credibility for the last several months. So how are you going to fit the UK belt in this whole big pool full of belts? It's like feels like boxing or the UFC now.
Yeah, and how successful this is, if this is going to be the start of going into other places as well and just cultivating different markets in the world for this company. I mean, this seems like a somewhat of a dry run experiment for them. But, I mean, the fact that they've promoted this on television with the highlights of stating, you know, their intention is to do a weekly show, that tells me this is more than just a test. It seems that they're pretty locked into going ahead with this. I mean, the shows are sold out, so I think that they're certainly, you know, it's all all hands on deck here for this to go ahead with this as their next experiment slash project.
Yeah. And, you know, the UK is such a just an unbelievable hotbed right now. When you look at all the talent popping out of there, you have guys like Will Ospreay, who I actually mentioned on my podcast, MLW Radio, last night, tweeting about a certain wrestler's bad attitude turning an entire locker room. And just for the record, it was not Cody Rhodes. It was actually a female wrestler that was brought in. It was not Cody Rhodes. So I just want to clarify that. But Will Ospreay, another great talent that actually, you know, if you think about all the guys out there that are free agents, he turned down that WWE offer, those overtures, and has decided to stay his course. I'm, you know, thinking about Kenny Omega. Will another guy turn down a WWE deal? It doesn't happen very often, but two very talented guys that I'm sure New Japan is thrilled to keep if they can keep Omega.
Yeah, and that's going to be the other side of the equation this year is how aggressive these other outside companies are going to be in keeping their key guys, your Ring of Honors, your New Japans, and how aggressive you are in trying to maintain these, because you also need your key guys to build around as well. And this is going to meet to up the value of your Will Ospreys and your Kenny Omegas and guys that you see on that level, that these other promotions need people as well. And it's going to be fascinating to watch the talent side of things and how much this drives up demand for quality talent.
And now more than ever, you look at this, just the overwhelming sea of great talent that any booker and promoter has access to. It's unbelievable. We're really in this golden era of great talent from Mexico to Great Britain to Ireland to Japan. I mean, it's a real great time to be a wrestling fan and in the wrestling business. And you have these things like Flow Slam that's helping to pump up some of these companies, and hopefully they can continue to do it. Hopefully the business model makes sense. And then you have WWE doing things like the Cruiserweight Invitational, and you have the UK tournament. And hell, look, they even are adding more pay-per-views. We have Elimination Chamber returning Sunday, February 12th. You have Fastlane coming to Milwaukee on March 5th, featuring Goldberg and the whole Raw brand. It's just like there's wrestling around each and every corner.
Yeah, it's amazing to watch the sheer volume now that is easily accessible, even outdoor Florida shows in the middle of the jungle.
Oh, yes.
You can now watch.
Yes. Mr. St. Laurent is involved with the Jungle Cruise Championship Wrestling. That's on Flow Slam. I think it's also called, what was that, Style Battles show?
Yes, which I watched on Saturday.
Well, shout out for them. They sound like a Comedy Central show when you had those like RC remote like cars that can smash into each other. I don't remember. It was a similar name. But I like the atmosphere, like the jungle theme they had for their Saturday night. I understand it was very cold. It was like 38 degrees, something like that. So, hey, you know, it doesn't happen too often down that way. But when it does, it really sucks. But it's great when you can just in a few clicks access everything from Jungle Championship Wrestling to New Japan World to ACW down there on Flow Slam. It's a great company that MSL also works for, free plug. But there's so much wrestling, and it's just really it's a pick 'em. What do you want to watch? What's your flavor? Cool. You know, I mean, even New Japan now with the Fantastic Mania tour kicking off very soon. You'll be able to see a lot of the great guys from CMLL. You know, a lot of great guys. Roosh, Blue Panther Jr., Dragon Lee, Mystico, Volador Jr., you name them, they're coming out. Ultimo Guerrero, and even Will Ospreay is going to be on that tour. And it's one of the biggest merch tours for New Japan of the year. They sell a ton of those Mexican masks, and it changes up things when they really need to, coming off of the Tokyo Dome. So that's something I'm excited to watch.
Well, I've got a wrap here, Court.
Don't get hot about it. Shit.
Well, I'm literally getting a call here. It's been a lot of fun doing this show with you. I'm sure we are going to do shows again at some point in the future. But this has been a lot of fun. I'm sorry we can't continue here on a regular basis. And we will certainly revisit this if our schedules change. But I just want to thank you for doing this show.
Hey,
it's been very enjoyable.
Dude, we were friends way before we did this crazy podcast. We'll remain friends for a long time. And, you know, I just want to thank everyone for listening. It's been a lot of fun doing this with John. He makes doing the show so easy. And it really is just our schedules suck. And we wanted to give you that one last show so you could hear us explain everything. There's like there's like no drama or any weirdness. We just seriously, it's just schedules. And
people are going to be so disappointed with that.
I know. Let's just make up some shit on Twitter and just have a fake Twitter war. And that will set the stage for Grapple Kingdom 2 finally in Orlando. So, hey, there's always that.
So check out MLWRadio.com, LiveAudioWrestling.com, and we will chat with you, well, at some point.
Sorry.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.